I'm Steve Wasserman, publisher of Heyday, an independent nonprofit press in Berkeley, now in its 50th year of publishing, founded in 1974. I've also been the former editor of the Los Angeles Times Book Review and a publisher and editor for a variety of houses in New York, including Times Books when it was an imprint of Random House, publisher of Hill and Wang, an imprint of Farrar, Straus & Giroux, editor-at-large for Yale University Press. I seem to be someone who's determined to work every station in the publishing kitchen before I'm done. I have a new book, Tell Me Something, Tell Me Anything, Even If It's a Lie, and it charts my 50 years through the world of books, ideas, and activism. It is a memoir and essays, and is the story of an awakening of an empathetic sensibility, and I hope reveals the depth and breadth of my enthusiasms. It ranges over politics, literature, and the tumults of a world in upheaval. I've been fortunate to encounter and to befriend a number of remarkable people along the way, including Orson Welles, Barbara Streisand, Jackie Kennedy, Susan Sontag, and the late Christopher Hitchens. The book traces my devotion to the life of the mind and is at bottom an argument about how much in our tormented world there is to admire, to learn from, and to help us forge a better and more just future. You might reasonably wonder what insights can be teased out from the welter of events and people I'm at pains to introduce you to, from Daniel Ellsberg in the Pentagon Papers to my near 9 years as editor of the Los Angeles Times Book Review. Insight number one, live all you can. It's a mistake not to. The people I most admired and learned from all seemed to share a single attribute. They were hungry for adventure, endlessly curious, and knew that to get smart, it was best to surround themselves with people even smarter than themselves. They were omnivores about politics, about literature, and knew in their bones that they must always keep an open mind, but not so open that their brains fell out. When I think of many of the people I've been fortunate to meet and even to work with, I think of their lust for life, their pursuit of aesthetic bliss, their detestation of philistinism, their love of learning, their opposition to ethical and aesthetic shallowness, their insistence on being grown-ups, their hatred of suffering and death. Insight number two. Stay young by refusing cynicism. I spent the summer of 1974 living in Susan Sontag's Manhattan penthouse, Jasper John's former studio. Her walls were lined with her 8,000 books, which she called her personal retrieval system. I had just graduated UC Berkeley and was in New York working with an author who hired me to do research on the implications of what is now called globalism, but which many of us then condemned as imperialism. I almost got a crick in my neck from perusing the books in Susan's apartment, realizing that only now was my real education beginning. For reasons wholly mysterious, I found myself drawn to four blue-backed volumes of the journals of André Gide, the famous French writer. I'd never read him. These, like others in Susan's library, were filled with her lightly penciled underlinings. I came across a line I never forgot. I know I shall have entered old age when I awake and no longer find myself filled with outrage at the way things are. Insight number three, don't stay in your lane. We live in a world that more and more seeks to throttle ambition, deny imagination, and refuse possibility. Thinking with the blood, remaining hostage to superstition and theocratic models of governance, championing rigid ideas of identity politics, all strike me as denying the essential American dream of self-invention. I've always been a fan of folks who sought to burst the bonds of class, to rid themselves of the suffocations of race and gender. I hold with the late Christopher Hitchens, who tried always to affirm and to reaffirm the ideas of secularism, reason, libertarianism, internationalism, and solidarity. Insight number four, don't fear difficulty. When did difficulty become suspect in American culture, widely derided as anti-democratic and contemptuously dismissed as evidence of so-called elitism. If a work of art or book or movie isn't somehow immediately understood or accessible by and to large numbers of people, it is often ridiculed as esoteric, obtuse, or even somehow un-American. A culture filled with smooth and familiar consumptions produces in people rigid mental habits and stultified conceptions. Difficulty annoys them. And having become accustomed to so much pabulum served up by a pandering and invertebrate media, they experience difficulty not just as difficult, but as insult. The exercise of cultural authority and artistic or literary or aesthetic discrimination is seen as evidence of snobbery, entitlement, and privilege lording it over ordinary folks. A perverse populism increasingly deforms our culture, consigning some works of art to a realm somehow more rarefied and less accessible to a broad public. Thus is choice constrained and the tyranny of mass appeal deepened in the name of democracy. The ideal of serious enjoyment of what isn't instantly understood is rare in American life. It is under constant siege. It is the object of scorn from both left and right. The pleasures of critical thinking ought not to be seen as belonging to the province of an elite. They are the birthright of every citizen. For such pleasures are the very heart of literacy, without which democracy itself is dulled. More than ever, we need a defense of the eros of difficulty. Insight number 5, cultivate the nobility of contradiction. Oscar Wilde once said that he distrusted any man's dictionary that did not contain the word utopia. As I've grown older, I came to believe that he was wrong, if by utopia he meant a republic where all is ostensibly well, all needs are met, all are happy and content, all social contradictions resolved. No such place ever existed, and as long as our species is composed of, as a great philosopher once put it, the broken timber of humanity, it never will. We should strive to welcome disagreement, dissension, and argument, even fierce intellectual combat, never violent, confident that our ideas become sharper and are thrown into clarifying relief when they are subjected to pushback and counter-arguments. Hence my admiration for those critics and crusaders like Susan Sontag and Christopher Hitchens, among others. It never mattered whether I agreed with this opinion or that view as they might offer. What mattered most, and I could feel it in the impress of their sentences and the pitch and roll of their arguments, was that I, like all their lucky readers, was being encouraged to think more rigorously, more seriously, more ardently. There seemed in their work no division between intellection and heart. Their example encouraged me to embrace a life of curiosity, irony, debunking, and disputation. Their pleasures were unrivaled.